what Democrats do and what the liberal elite does is they believe...
Who? That's another thing. Pronouns, they, them. Who? Who? Liberal elite? But not the lawmakers, not the politicians, not the podcasters, not the president, not the... Who? Where are my liberal elite?
There's plenty of schools you can get into. I want to know your GPA. Hey, you want to know what's great? At least you could tell your disappointed parents that you couldn't get into fucking Harvard and Yale because you're Asian.
Is this AI? What the fuck am I listening to right now? Hello? Bruh, are you okay?
Now you don't have that. So what are you going to do?
On Twitch? On Twitch, bro! I feel like this would be like a permaban. This is like a crazy... I feel like this is insane. I've never in my life said that our healthcare system is perfect or even good. There are several massive changes. Expanded Medicare, public option. There are tons of better things that we can do in the United States. The delusion is thinking that we can have every single part of our healthcare system we can right now and have the government provide the same thing to everybody and that it would be cheaper. If you think that, you're not realistic. Your opinion has nothing to do with reality. You're fucking retarded. There are compromises that we're going to have to make, okay? That's the thing. If every single time I criticize one of these insane far left positions, that your first thought is like, wait, Destiny, are you in favor of raping sick people until they die?
With Richard Hanania, who, depending on who you ask, is either first to the case or last to the case on a number of issues. But I first got to know Richard when he wrote the book, The Origins of Woke, which is a very good analysis of how civil rights law was the structural underpinning to the woke movement. He's had a number of ideologues.
Okay, what's a good point? I'm not watching this whole thing. Left? What is this?
So I'll tell you, I disagree with that. Left, and I'll tell you why. Now, I believe,
you know, while we might bellyache about Candace Owens and, you know, kind of Alex Jones and other kind of right wing conspiracy theorists, actually, the right wing voter has had a superior ability to consume it as entertainment, but not as kind of factual reporting, and to maintain some of those epistemic defenses.
The average conservative voter probably thinks that epistemic is a form of ass cancer. What the fuck world? These fucking retards were literally dying to COVID because they thought the vaccines were going to make them turn into magnets.
And so this seems to undercut the elite human capital concept when, in fact, the elite human capital, highly educated, liberal-leaning city dwellers, are the most likely group to believe...
To believe in trans people? What's he going to say? To believe... I don't even know what the talking about would be here.
Even really insane assassination conspiracy theories.
What do you think the party breakdown is on the JFK assassination stuff? How many... You think that the... Why would you even go to conspiracy theories? You think the average left-leaning person is more conspiratorial than the average right-leaning person whose entire outlook on life is literally built on conspiracy theories? Federal judges that are conservatives right now won't even admit who won the 2020 election. That's a conspiracy theory. I'm getting baited. This is baited. However, here's the thing I will say. I don't know if Hanani will bring this up. Not all bad beliefs are of the same level of badness. I think conspiracy theories are dumb. If a person were to say, I think there is a conspiracy to fake the Trump assassination. I was like, okay, how would you, there's a lot of homework we had to do here. Why would you believe in a conspiracy that Trump would make up a fake assassination of himself? And it's like, well, yeah, I think the first thing was the fact that he can coordinate a lot of people and bring them together for crazy conspiracies, like to completely and totally overthrow the 2020 election. It's like, okay, true. I think that he's had his government literally audit his intelligence community and all of the underlying workers to make sure that they're loyalist to him. And that was like an outwardly stated goal. What was the rule that they had where it's like you have to talk about your position on the election in order to make it into a governmental office? Like, okay, sure, true. You can run down thing after thing after thing. And it's like, okay, well, it's still a conspiracy theory, but Trump has given you every single reason to believe that he could concoct a conspiracy like this. The reality is, and there's no possible way that you can get anybody to honestly engage with this, but if you were to ask somebody, if Joe Biden, if Kamala Harris, if Hillary Clinton, if Bill Clinton, if they thought that they could successfully pull off a fake assassination attempt to boost their popularity, do you think they would do it? I think every single one of those people in a dark room with nobody watching, nobody would know the outcome, would say no, they wouldn't do it. I don't think they would. I view these people as patriots that love America. Donald Trump would do it in a fucking heartbeat.
So I'll tell you, I disagree with that, and I'll tell you why. Now, I believe that
one word, Ivermectin, baby.
It's true. I believe that polling. I believe that Democratic voters believe in conspiracy theories. This is why I'm not a populist. I believe Republican voters and independent voters all believe in conspiracy theories. I think this is just something that has deep roots in, you know, just because people are not that informed and conspiracy theories are fun. I think the difference here, though, is like it's kind of impressive that a lot of Democrats believe in these conspiracy theories, but at the same time, you know, they're not getting it from their politicians. Like, tell me a big Democratic politician, some kind of leader, or like even like a big donor or something who says Butler was staged. Like, you know, the people are going to be the people, but there is a class on the Democratic side that's a little bit more responsible. Now, let's look at the alternative where on the Republican side, I mean, just look at Marjorie Taylor Greene, just to take an example at the top of my mind, a tweet about how they're manufacturing the viruses and then they're making the vaccines to like sell them to us and to get rich, right? This is just like normal, somebody like MTG, but there's like, you know, 5 or 10 congressmen at this point who talk like this. My favorite example of this is the Paul Pelosi hammer thing, where somebody goes to Paul Pelosi's house, Nancy Pelosi's husband, beats him with a hammer. And then the list of people who...
You probably made jokes about that because he wishes that he could suck Paul Pelosi's dick. He probably gets gay fantasies about it constantly. Nobody is more oppressed and secretly gay than the average fucking conservative man, especially if they're not married. Does this guy have a wife?
Like implying that it was a conspiracy. It's not some crazy random person. It's like Elon Musk, Donald Trump, you know, even Ted Cruz, who's usually not that bad on this stuff, right? It's like the biggest names in conservatism, Tucker Carlson, right? Like the 5'10", like 8 of the 10 biggest conservative figures in the country. So,
but where, if liberals are not getting these ideas from their political leaders, where are they getting them from?
A lot of them come literally from fucking conservatives. A lot of them come from you fuckers because you guys are the ones highlighting it and blowing it up so much. Look at the Epstein shit.
Technically, just people are like, whatever, you ask someone, did they stage that thing? And they don't like Donald Trump. And they'll say, okay, Donald Trump staged it. Or did Russia help him win the election? They'll say, okay, he helped it. I think it's just organic. Like, people are naturally more conspiratorial than you think. I think the better, you know, the thing that you could hope to do is have...
Especially when you spent your entire life undermining trust in every single part of the establishment. Of course, everybody's going to have that feeling.
An elite of like, you know, journalists and politicians who kind of, you know, kind of blockade that stuff, kind of quarantine in it, and then stay based in reality. I think the Republican conspiracy theories are becoming policy. I mean, I think the no. thing is there. I think the stolen election stuff, it's just something that's fundamental to Republican politics in a way.
Let me push back on this because while there are versions of this on the right for sure, what
versions of this on the right? These are demons, dude. You can't. These are not serious people. Put me in a room. I'll debate any of these. Put me in a room with any of these fucking losers. With all of them. Not Hanani. I don't think he's a loser. But like you line up 10 Republicans. I don't give a fuck. You're going to all have your laptops, too. How are you going to say this? Well, it's not like part of the Republican Party. Who are all of the most popular Republican talk show host people? The most popular conservative people? You're telling me that Tucker Carlson, the guy who believes in demons leaving bruises on him, is not a conspiratorial figure? You're going to tell me that Candace Owens is not a conspiratorial figure? You're going to tell me that Joe Rogan doesn't entertain conspiracies constantly? You're going to tell me that the average Republican doesn't believe that the 2020 election was rigged and that that rot has literally permeated our institutions now because this is a qualifying question you have to ask? Every single person on Trump's cabinet believes in that the 2020 election was rigged? You're going to tell me that RFK Jr. saying that he would find a cure for autism in 4 months and he decided that the answer was Advil, that that's not coming from the top? Like, all of your most popular figures are all conspiratorial fucking losers. Every single fucking one of these fucking people is a fucking lunatic. All of them are.
What Democrats do and what the liberal elite does is they believe...
Who? That's another thing. Pronounce they, them. Who? Who? Liberal elite? But not the lawmakers, not the politicians, not the podcasters, not the president, not the... Who? Where are my liberal elite? The only liberal elite whose name you've heard said time and time again, you wouldn't even fucking know about him if it wasn't for conservatives constantly doomering, is George Soros. What the fuck does he even do? And the fucking cringy World Economic Forum shit, is that where they all go? And they're all like, guys, here's where the liberals are getting their marching orders from. They're all going to have us eating crickets or whatever. And like every liberal is like, I've never heard of this in my entire fucking life, bro. Dude, kill me.
Believe in the big lie, the big conspiracy that we do. It's so big and...
Politics in a way
that's... Let me push back on this because
if I can't hold on, I'm so sorry. The big lie is a term that was developed specifically to refer to Donald Trump selling the lie that the 2020 election would be rigged, that he started selling in advance, a year in advance. He was saying that it was going to be rigged. That's the big lie. It sounded like he was about to try to rebrand the big lie as something that the Democrats did, but I'm sorry. Hold on. My bad. I shouldn't have stopped him early. Certainly he's not going to do that.
Because while there are versions of this on the right for sure, what Democrats do and what the liberal elite does is they believe in the big lie, the big conspiracy that it's so big, in fact, that we like don't even notice these things. And they're driving their policy based on things like blank slateism or on the insane conspiracy. Hold on, that we had to live.
So what, he's a race realist and he thinks that liberals are conspiratorial because we believe in tabula rasa or whatever the fuck? I don't know what blank slateism is. In this context, if somebody were to say blank slateism, the feeling that I get is he's saying that liberals are delusional for thinking that every single person can achieve the same things in life and they're pushing too much for equal outcomes and we need to be realistic about people and where they come from. That could be from a race realist perspective or it could be from an environmental perspective. I'm not sure. It could be from a cultural perspective. You think Muslims are the same as Christians in America? You want to import? I don't know. That's. But also, what the fuck are you even referring to here?
Is they believe in the big lie, the big conspiracy that we don't, it's so big, in fact, that we like don't even notice these things. And they're driving their policy based on things like blank slateism or on the insane conspiracy, hold on, that we had to live with,
that
our entire government, our entire society was being directed by white supremacy. And this sort of systematic racism was driving all different kinds of outcomes and that we had to reorient our entire society.
It's too much. It's too retarded. I can't. They're too emotional. These are. I don't want to be sexist. I don't even know. Whatever. I don't care. Okay. I can't. I'm good.
Difficult to build the kind of like momentum behind a candidate when it's, you know, so much. I don't see this problem existing on the right, right? Where like you don't have, you know, I mean, obviously Trump has lost a lot of his, I think, supporters in the last year. But like during the election.
Okay. Genuinely. Is she. I don't understand why she's doing this, and she sounds really fucking out of it.
And they show up for him, and they form this kind of like unified like. And some of this has to do with right wing values around loyalty and submission and stuff. And I don't.
Also, Trump says stuff that excites them and makes them want to vote for him. I know, kind of a foreign concept to an advocate for the Democratic Party, but he also energizes the base. Whereas within the Democratic Party, in the lead up to every election, it seems all we hear is nothing but tut-tutting about how we have to accept the fact that we don't get to have good things. It was the same in all three, Hillary, Biden, and Harris. What was their bull?
She realized she's wrong by now, and now she's just depressed and still having to argue for it. Her brain is flailing. This is your brain on YouTube essays, as they literally watch a YouTuber who is too afraid to confront literally anybody and has been too afraid to confront anybody for like 5 years on any disagreements. Good one.
Old vision for the future? I don't know, Pell Grants or some shit. Not some big unifying ideology, but a set of, you know, moderate, maybe moderate reforms. Just little tweaking on the margins. And a lot of their energy was spent trying to convince people to vote for them in spite of the fact that they weren't offering that much. Trump doesn't have this issue because he just says shit, you know? My argument, though, is that because we believe in things and they don't, and our stuff is good and their stuff is bad, we could positively advocate for good policies that motivate people to vote without...
Yeah, but you don't. You just say shit, too. They don't realize it, but you fucking retards are the same. Trump says some retarded shit, but then people on the far left say some retarded shit. And then the center left is the one that has to govern literally the entire fucking planet. And then you're mad that they don't make the same bombastic, retarded promises that you guys have never been able to deliver on ever in any country throughout all of history or in any country that exists in modern day where any of you have any amount of power. But whatever, dude.
Having to lie. Like, it's crazy to me that Democrats, like liberal globehead types, will argue against something like Medicare for all when, again, it's factually better than the status quo. Again, the math has been run on this.
No. It's, but we can make shit up, too, I guess. Yeah.
It's just numbers.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mathematical equation to be solved, and it has been solved.
The reason why it's so damaging, too, when he says things like this is because he's not saying that, like, liberals have been ineffective at passing policy, even though we know what the better policy is. What he's saying is that liberals and conservatives have come together to decide not to pass the policy to appease their corporate overlords because we live in a single-party duopoly.
Why are we arguing over this? Do you just hate the idea of agreeing with us that much? Like, we can't even stand next to each other on this? You have to drag it out here? Like, you're so contrarian. But Vashma might have to tax people more? No, you wouldn't. Medicare for all would cost the government less than the current system. I would argue positively for tax increases, too. But on this, the fact that we still argue on stuff like this reminds me at times that, like, the blue MAGA thing is more of a problem than I often give it credit for. There are people who are staunchly against good things for themselves because they emotionally don't like the idea of agreeing with people who want to help them, even though they're not on opposite sides of the culture war. Or maybe it's like a three-front culture war, where you have the fascists on one side, and then you have the progressives, and then you have, like, but within the progressives, there's this throng of, like, really belligerent, economically reactionary people who insist, even if it's objectively wrong, on tossing stones to the left. I'm not even talking about, like, corporate lobbyists or anything. I mean, just regular people. I don't get it. You can do the math. What has Schubert done for you? Why are you so loyal?
Necessarily advocate adopting that, but I do think that, I mean, again, like, you don't even support Kamala Harris during the election. It's not like you say, like, okay, well, we'll get her elected and then we criticize. It's that when you're not even
also keep in mind that, like, Biden was elected and then October 7th happened, and then in spite of overwhelming pressure from the Democratic base, he lied to defend Israel over and over. And
there was not overwhelming pressure from the Democratic base to fuck over Israel after they had like the biggest terrorist attack like in fucking world history, my dude. You guys are just fucking deranged.
And set the stage for an attempt at a bipartisan support for the genocide, though it ended up being so unpopular that it hurt Harris, and now it's like overwhelmingly unpopular with Democrats, even with like non-progressive Democrats, the behavior of Israel. Like, so clearly the strategy of vote for them without complaint, but then push them left isn't actually really effective. It's almost as though there is a schism between what the base wants and what the elected representatives are delivering. How do we solve that without trying to vote in better candidates? You know, ones who might actually win?
I hear the cost-less argument, but won't the tax of high-income Americans vote? No, the cost-less argument is a lie. It's just made of shit. But it's just whatever. None of these people argue policy or anything anyway. They don't give a fuck. It's all sloppulism. All of our politics is sloppulism. Not just these guys on the far left, though. The whole right does it, so...
Even want to get her elected, then
well,
it's
I have
that's
much
where
less...
I see the criticism as being the critiquing power thing.
Okay,
because it's
so,
like you don't,
yeah.
you're
so
not.
Let's talk about power. Let's talk about leverage.
Yeah. Okay.
Do I have more leverage against Kamala Harris before she's elected or once she's president for 4 years?
Well, in the sense, I mean, I see what you're saying, like as like a protest voter threat. But I don't know. Do the Democrats take that threat seriously, or
you have midterms and then you have your next presidential election? To say you have no leverage, to say that nothing happens, that political leaders aren't pressured in upcoming midterms. That's so obviously false. Of course they are. Of course there's pressure with the upcoming midterm. You're hearing it right now when people are talking about, like, what is Trump going to do? And the Republican midterms are coming up. Now, for Trump, you literally can't pressure him because the guy's just fucking insane. But that's literally true no matter what. And that's the Republicans' fault.
Is it tendency to instead? Because I feel like the...
They should? They're doing politics? What if the Democrats just don't believe people when they say they won't vote for them? Isn't that the thing? I don't get it. Like, I don't understand what motivates the thought process. I don't get it. I don't. I really, truly don't understand it. I feel like I understand the fascists more. I genuinely do. Like, I think I better understand this, like, all-consuming flame that burns on spite and suffering in the heart of the fascists. I understand that more than the idea of a person who's nominally liberal, but has views this illiberal. Well, okay, have you considered that maybe the Democrats don't care if you vote for them?
This reminds me of when Finkelstein in our debate was like, I can't even imagine the mind of the current Israeli. I can't even get into their head. It's impossible to imagine what they're thinking. And it's like, really? Is it really that hard, bro?
Or whether or not you vote for them? I don't get it. I don't get it. It's beyond me. It's completely beyond me. I just don't understand it. Like, isn't the point to do politics? Sometimes I feel like the liberals around the Democratic Party care less about politics than a king would. Like, a king would think, I should give this speech or offer this reprieve from the grain tax so that the peasantry feels gracious towards me when next the soldiers are dropped.
Sorry, let me clarify this position, because every fucking person, because half my audience is significantly the left of me, because you're fucking retarded. My bad. Let me clarify this, because I see everybody spamming this. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I just don't support a Medicare for all baseline system. We really by predator. Yes. I think that we can have a better healthcare system in the United States. I've never said, actually, you know what, dude, fuck you. Hold on, you're fucking wrong. I've never in my life said that our healthcare system is perfect or even good. There are several massive changes. Expanded Medicare, public option. There are tons of better things that we can do in the United States. The delusion is thinking that we can have every single part of our healthcare system we can right now and have the government provide the same thing to everybody and that it would be cheaper. If you think that, you're not realistic. Your opinion has nothing to do with reality. You're fucking retarded. There are compromises that we're going to have to make, okay? That's the thing. If every single time I criticize one of these insane far-left positions, that your first thought is like, wait, Destiny, are you in favor of raping sick people until they die? Just please, watch Vosh. There are so many further left content creators you can go watch. Watch Vosh, watch Hassan. Go watch Lauren Barks. He's farther left than me, okay? Okay.
Hassan, I regret to tell you that you have anti-Asian politics. Your recent report on Asia and Asian-related news has been horrible.
Uh-oh.
Why can't we do the two things at the same time? They are not mutually exclusive.
Uh-oh, somebody didn't get the subversion memo.
Wait, you think I'm anti-Asian politics because I think the Supreme Court decision? How much, dude, I'm sorry. There is nothing more annoying to me than fucking first generation, second generation, third generation Asian motherfuckers who are dogs to white people.
Okay, how many generations down are we gonna go? What the fuck? They're chattel dogs. Doggedness.
Okay, you are literally barking for white people. Shut the fuck up, okay? This guy's literally like, no, I am the model minority. Yeah, okay, dude. No, you don't understand. The model minority myth is not a myth. I literally am that.
I don't understand what... I don't know, dude. It's so hard to break apart the... The model minority is not a myth. It's a real thing. That's why it's such a controversial topic. right? There were Asian people that complained in the Harvard case about affirmative action hurting Asian Americans. The average SAT scores and shit they needed to get into some of these Ivy League scores was higher than a white person. There's a huge selection filter for people coming from Asia. That China has a massive fucking population. So when you have a billion plus people and only a few of them are coming to the United States for school, they're going to be fucking geniuses and their families are usually fucking loaded. Yes, it's a model minority thing. That's not to say that like the stereotypes are good or the racism is good or anything else, but it's like a real phenomenon that you kind of have to like account for and think about when you're navigating identity politics related stuff in the United States. Are we just going to pretend that every single immigrant and every single person that comes to this country under the exact same circumstances? Like, it's okay. Dad,
I love math. I'm so Asian. I love math. Please. Is that what you're going to say next? Dumbass. Shut the fuck up. Come on. Give me what I'm doing here that you think is anti-Asian. Talking about affirmative action, this motherfucker's only... Why should Asians lose under affirmative action, though? So what? Benefit white women the most. Motherfucker, get into Berkeley then, okay? Suck my dick. Get into Berkeley. Go get into Berkeley. Go get into any of the fucking University of California schools then, okay? Shut the fuck up.
Oh, why? Because that's where all Asians need to go? To the West Coast? Hassan?
There's plenty of schools you can get into. I want to know your GPA. Hey... You want to know what's great? At least you could tell your disappointed parents that you couldn't get into fucking Harvard and Yale because you're Asian.
What the fuck? Is this AI? What the fuck am I listening to right now? Hello? Bruh, are you okay?
Now you don't have that. So what are you going to do?
On Twitch? On Twitch, bro! I feel like this would be like a permaban. This is like a crazy... I feel like this is insane. It's like a, like, imagine like a black person crying in Hassan's chat. Like, bro, I feel like you're downplaying how much the gutting of Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act is hurting us. And Hassan's like, oh, well, if it bothers you so much, why don't you go cry to your dad? Oh, wait, you're black. You probably don't have one. Ha ha ha. Like, Jesus, bro, chill. Holy shit.
At least you could tell your disappointed parents that you couldn't get into fucking Harvard and Yale because you're Asian. Now you don't have that. So what are you going to do?
By the way, you want a really funny, crazy, oh my God, we're about to tie like 12 different, not really, but like three different completely unrelated things completely together. One of the, a thing that I've thought about in the past, and I've kind of addressed this in the past, because I've done racist humor, sexist humor, anti-Semitic humor. For me, well, at least 10 years ago, anti-Semitic humor didn't really seem like as big of a deal to me, because it's like, is there anti-Semitism in the U.S.? Like, not, I know every Jew is about, oh, the biggest victims of hate crime, blah, blah, blah. But, like, by and large, like, the Jews aren't being, like, persecuted in the United States. Now, today, well, now we're totally different story. But 10 years ago, you know, they're a high-achieving minority group. Don't deal with, you know, as much, like, systemic oppression, all that bullshit. Okay, they got their Hollywood Jews. They got their banker Jews. They got their Israeli Jews. They got their Mossad Jews. They got everybody in all the positions they need to be, okay? In a way, me... kind of saying that, like, you know, I don't think anti-Semitic humor is necessarily as big a deal as, like, other types of punching down humor, is kind of a reverse racism model minority claim, right? So the reason why it's okay in American society to make racist jokes against Asian people is because we don't perceive it as punching down because of the model minority thing. So it's funny because Hassan is denying... And he also attacked me for my quote-unquote anti-Semitism, saying I was anti-Semitic because my rationalization was stupid for why I didn't think anti-Semitic jokes were as big of a deal, especially because usually me and Dan. But in a funny way, Hassan is making jokes that he's only making against Asian people because he himself and his chat perceives them to be model minority characters, so they're okay to roast for things that might be, that we view as somewhat essential to their race or culture because of that. That's just kind of funny to me, but that was a lot. There's your... your woke education for the day.
Didn't get in because you're a dumbass, okay? What are you going to do now? Now, you just couldn't get in because you're a dumbass, okay? At least you had that. You could have just been like, oh, well, I'm Asian. They're discriminating against me. Now you don't even have that. You're fucked.
Like, that. This was a real thing. Not necessarily hardcore discrimination, but I think you did need... Who has a link? Was this submitted in an amicus brief to the court? I don't remember if it was, or if it was just a thing that I posted around a lot for, like, the average... score that you would need based on your race to get into like an Ivy League college. This guy emailed me. I'm pretty disappointed with the state of British politics. The crazy thing is that in less than 2 years, the Labour government has already, one, brought in a landmark renter's rights bill that prevents, among other things, eviction without cause, two, nationalized half of the railway carriers in this country with a plan to nationalize all of them by the end of the parliament. 3, massively expanded the eligibility for free school meals to another 500,000 children. 4, introduced a bill to lower the voting age to 16. 5, invested massively in green energy, which is now making up over half of our total energy mix using a government investment vehicle. 6, has increased the minimum wage while reducing the age at which you receive the higher rate of minimum wage. 7, increased and simplified the benefit system, the universal credit system. This is all stuff off the top of my head. Admittedly, I'm Keir Starmer's strongest soldier. Objectively, this is the program of a solidly center-left administration that is actually competent at getting things delivered, but nobody knows about it, and the left somehow think that the Labour government is keeping austerity in place because they haven't magically reversed every single cut the Conservatives made over a decade and 2 years of incredibly tight economic circumstances. And then he links two articles as examples of this. Here are what I see as some of the main problems in UK politics, which often overlap in the US. 1, media framing. A big issue is that our media landscape is heavily fucked and biased towards the right, especially towards the conservatives, the Daily Telegraph, the Daily Mail, the Times, etc. Pretty much the only major left-wing news publication is The Guardian, which has its own issues. See point 2. The net result of this is that there was an endless stream of sane-washing media coverage of the conservatives and Farage's terrible suggestions and policy. For some examples, they were heaping praise on Liz Truss's disastrous budget, the one that single-handedly shattered the conservatives' reputation as being fiscally responsible, a reputation that they have somehow kept in the face of reality for years, just like the Republicans. Examples, and then here are some articles. That whole machine has now swung into full attack mode on everything that Labour is doing, with the end result that low-information voters have a disproportionately worse view of the Labour government than previous conservative ones. Beyond that, there's a different issue in the media that seems to have become more of a problem over the last 15 or so years. And yes, 15 years. I was 12, or 15 years ago, I was 12, but I was genuinely a very politically engaged 12-year-old. I get the sense that the media wants politics to be interesting or narratively fulfilling and tries to make that a reality. Maybe it's a response to the attention economy or competition from social media hot takes, but the coverage always seems to be dominated by an attempt to manifest a more interesting story. Recently, that's become a huge thing of framing everything through the lens of UK politics being the battle of Farage versus Polanski, or Reform versus Green, right populist versus left populist. God, we are fucked if either of these people become the government. And then you get this downward spiral of media that convinces low-information voters that the government has no chance. The government's popularity falls. Media reports on the fall as the reason they have no chance ad infinitum. 2, the center-left vice. Same problem here as in the U.S. Nobody wants to defend the center-left, despite them being objectively the best and most effective governments. The attacks come from the right wing and the crazy left wing. You can't appeal to anyone. And so much of the media airtime is taken up with explaining why you're bad, that the many achievements you do have are completely unknown. You've talked about this in the U.S. context, so there's not much to say that you don't really know except the meme phrase. Populist framing. Again, it's bad. What do you want me to say? Ironically, our Green Party has become an alliance between A, socialists who are kicked out of the Labour Party after the Corbyn fuck-ups, and B, people who are kicked out of the Labour Party because of anti-Semitism, a lot of overlap between those groups, strangely, C, people who want to punish Labour over Gaza, and so the Green Party basically has no specific policies on climate change, but boy, do they want to cut all ties with Israel and introduce a wealth tax and rent controls. And then 4, first past the post works too well. This one is a specific problem with Farage. In the UK, the constituency boundaries are redrawn every 10 years by a nonpartisan commission process. As a result, politicians can't choose their voters, and so, up until recently, the first-past-the-post system has worked very well at preventing fringe parties from gaining much political power. The issue is that for the last 15 years, Farage has been associated exclusively with these fringe parties, from UKIP to Brexit to Reform, so he's never had any real political power. He only became an MP in the most recent election. That has put him in the best possible place. He can have a huge impact on the behavior of elected leaders, Cameron, Johnson, etc., through his ideas and the threat of his popularity. But since he's never actually in power, none of the inevitable fuck-ups his policy leads to get associated with him. There is no way that any sane voter should look at someone whose response to the obvious issues with Brexit before the vote was that that's project fear and won't happen. During the process was, we need to do the most maximal form of Brexit. Who cares if that breaks the Good Friday Agreement? And after all the predicted problems came about was, Brexit just wasn't done correctly. My only hope for the future is that the benefits of the Labour government in reducing energy costs, increasing wages, targeting poverty, come to fruition before the next election. If we fall into Biden's trap of doing a bunch of good that your successors take credit for while simultaneously fucking up the future, I will actually lose all faith in trying to use politics to help anyone. Also, it would help if your president didn't keep fucking up the global economy based.
Oh.
What?
We got to research data centers in the next few days.
Data centers?
Yeah, why? Your chat triggered me the fuck out of it.
Uh-oh, what'd they say?
Kevin O'Leary's building like a 40,000 acre data center in Utah that I guess it got passed or whatever.
This is the one that's like bigger than the island of Manhattan, right?
Yeah, it's fucking huge.
It's huge.
But I think my idea was like, well, I don't really give a fuck if how big a fucking data center is, as long as it's not like actually like giga leeching off of, I guess, our water supply slash whatnot. But I didn't have the I don't care if as long as it's like hurting a ton of people qualifier. And everybody was like, yeah, you realize like data centers are it's going to make us have no water. So now I got to fucking research about it.
I think the water thing is retarded. I think that was like an early retard talking point. But I think there are some concerns about this stuff. One of the actually, do you remember earlier in chat? Or no, wait, I was on Discord and I asked you about the electrical engineer shit or whatever.
Yeah.
Some guy emailed me like a huge fucking thing that I thought was interesting. I'm not going to remember any of this. Fuck. Are they capacitors and AC-DC converters? Basically, your computer needs to maintain certain voltages in order to make sure that everything is working well, like to be stable. You can't have voltage fluctuations on your components. Okay, it could cause damage to stuff. It could cause shit to just shut off. It could cause like memory loss. Like it's just bad. You can't have like voltage fucking things just fucking up, right? So there are things, I don't know if this would be considered capacitors or not, but like when you plug the wall power of your home into your power supply, right? Your power supply. One of the things the power supply does is it ensures that no matter what's coming from the wall and no matter what's being requested from the computer parts, that there is like a smooth delivery of power that can ramp up and down the amperage or whatever appropriately to ensure there's consistent voltage across your 12-volt rail, your 48-volt rail, whatever the fuck it is, right?
Yeah.
One of the issues, I think, I don't know how true this is, just one guy emailed me, but he says he works on this thing, is that these power plants are massive. Like, one of the things that he spit out was he said there was a 50 gigawatt. Is that the Utah one? This is like an unfathomable amount of power. And he said that one of the interesting challenges for stuff like this is that the way that these like massive render farms or GPU farms ever work is that they don't like have these consistent power draws like you might expect from, I don't know, like a train or something that's just kind of like running. And that you have like where power might look, power requested from something might look like on a graph might look like I don't know, like this, if it's like going up or down, power on like some of these like farms or whatever like could fucking have like shit like this going on where and so like I think
it's not an even draw, it's like but it's like jumping up and down,
super 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 spiky, but like ordinarily right, you have like power supplies and shit that manage this, you have uninterruptible power supplies that ensure like steady power delivery and all this other shit. But if we were to talk about this type of demand for wattage in like in the tens of gigawatt range, there's a question of like, do we even have infrastructure scalable that can even sustain these types of power delivery requests, right? Because if you can't, then you start tripping breakers or like bad stuff can happen up the line because shit just gets completely fucked or whatever.
And we figure that the people who are making this power plant haven't thought of this.
Well, the people making the power plant, the power delivery people definitely will think about this. It's just a question of like, I guess engineering it. I'm not saying that this is like a thing that can't be solved. Yeah. I'm sure it can be. I guess it's probably just a question of like, I don't know the question. I don't know what the guy was saying. I think he was just emailing me saying like, this is like one of the really, really difficult, power related things that people are looking to solve right now. But people are more focused on talking about like the water drain of everything, which I don't know how true that is, but yeah.
If he's emailing you as like, this is an interesting thing, like this is kind of what's happening, they have to solve this, that's fine. If he was emailing you as like look, there's spikes and it's going to like spike around and then, you know, breakers are going to flip. It's like, okay, well, I mean, I would assume that this is going to get solved before they would actually make it. But I mean, could be egg on my face.
Okay, well, fuck this guy. Here we go. Ready?
Yep.
Steven, longtime viewer, first time emailer.
I was inspired to reach out after seeing your recent discussion with Sabrina Tavernisi, I think. She seemed obviously very well-versed on the sort of public policy side of the issue, but not especially well-versed on the technical side of things, which is understandable, and that was not the focus of the conversation. I thought you might be interested to hear some of the other issues with these data centers from a very technical power systems engineering perspective. Quick background on me, I'm an electrical engineer in the power industry, and I've been working in this field for about 8 years now. The thing you need to understand with my job is that basically I focus on studying and designing control systems for large power plants that interconnect with the grid, where I basically focus on grid stability and reliability. Basically, I design the systems that make sure that when a new power plant connects to the grid, the voltage and frequency on the grid will remain stable through all circumstances. My background and what my blah, blah, blah does this is historically, this has to do with large scale renewables like wind, solar, and battery storage plants. These are related to the big boys that interconnect at the transmission level, not residential level systems. The reason why this is important to lay out is because I think that what a lot of people don't realize is that it is heavily my subfield of power systems that is shifting to take on a lot of engineering and control systems design and analysis for these data centers. Now, when you first hear that, it might sound sort of odd, but blah, 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 blah. I can explain why this makes sense. See, large-scale renewables like wind, solar, and battery plants fall into a category of technology we refer to as power electronics. The reason why we call it that is because each one of these technologies involves taking a DC power source and running it through some inverter, which is using high-frequency switching of high-power transistors to convert the power into AC, which can be injected into the grid. This is opposed to conventional generation like coal, gas, nuclear, etc., which uses big physical spinning generators to produce AC power. Even wind, although there obviously is a spinning generator, that generator is rectified into DC, which is converted back through an inverter into AC power so that we can let the generator spin at various speeds and not be locked to the grid frequency. The reason this is all relevant is because these data center facilities are actually very similar in principle. We have these large electronic DC loads, which are all the GPU racks, and these are being fed by power electronic converters that are essentially just inverters like the ones mentioned above, but running in reverse. There are some other loads involved, like fans and chiller pumps for cooling, but mostly like 75% plus of the total load of these facilities is just huge power electronic converters feeding the GPU loads. As you know, these facilities are huge and require a tremendous and almost delusional amount of power. We're talking about facilities on the order of 10 gigawatts or more. I don't think I need to explain to you how insane that is. You've heard all the various comparisons to the load size of entire cities, etc. Right off the bat, that's obviously an issue. You can't just whip out 10 gigawatts plus of generation capacity overnight like it's nothing. A lot of these facilities are being paired with adjacent renewable sites like wind and solar because those are the cheapest and quickest to get up and running. But then a lot of them are having to build additional gas turbines and things like that. A lot of engineers in my field, myself included, are becoming disillusioned with this because we're seeing all our added renewable capacity getting eaten up by these monster data centers, and then we're seeing the demand for fossil fuel generation spiking as well. For a lot of us, we got into this industry specifically in the first place because we personally believed in and cared about the mission of renewable energy and wanted to be a part of it. Now we're just seeing all of our progress getting rolled back by the new data center race, and we don't like it. But capacity is just one part of the problem, and really, it's the simple part of the problem. Obviously, it's not easy to just build that much generation, but at least in principle, it's not complicated. You have 10 gigawatts of load, and you need to pair it with 10 gigawatts of additional generation. Easy, right? Unfortunately, it's much more complicated than that. See, these data centers are special. They don't behave like any other large industrial load. Historically, big industrial loads like factories, pumping stations for water, and other things like that are pretty straightforward. Sure, the load and the power consumption is large, but the loads themselves are relatively consistent, which means that it's easy in principle for the grid to handle, because we can predict what they will do. They will sit there and consume that power, so just dispatch the generation for it, and easy, you're done, it's balanced and stable. Data centers, on the other hand, are very different. The actual CompSci description of what is happening inside the GPU is a bit of a black box to me, but at a basic level, you can imagine that all these GPUs are constantly receiving and processing through a series of tasks, and these tasks will require differing amounts of compute and therefore differing amounts of power. This means that from moment to moment, on the scale of milliseconds, the power consumption of the data center can be jumping around wildly. We're talking like 100%, then 50 milliseconds later, 70%, and then 100 milliseconds later, 80%, and so on and so forth, jumping all over the place like crazy, incredibly rapidly. Here's an example of what that can look like, and it looks like a better version of what I drew over here. The grid can't handle this. Sure, the early adopters and some of the first generation data centers could just do this because they were so relatively small and few that the grid wasn't really affected by it. But when you start to scale this up to the gigawatt range, you begin to have major issues. Generators can't keep up with this level of rapidly changing load. They can't react to change output to restore system balance that quickly over and over. This means that the erratic oscillations you see above will end up manifesting as instability and noise in the grid voltage and frequency, which can lead to all sorts of issues up to and including cascading tripping events that crash the grid. Speaking of tripping, that is also an issue. These data centers are built by the tech developers around the primary goal of maximization of uptime. That means that they are often paired with some sort of backup power generation system, and they will disconnect from the grid and fall back to that system if they encounter even the slightest disturbance in the grid power. You can imagine a truly game-breaking situation here. Let's say there is a fault somewhere on a grid system with like a 50 gigawatt data center, and that fault causes a disturbance in the voltage that causes one data center to trip, and then that one data center tripping leads an additional flicker in the power, which kicks off a cascade of other ones tripping. Now your system has suddenly lost 50 gigawatts of load, which causes the grid frequency to wildly spike, and then that triggers protections that take all the generators offline, and now you have a total grid blackout from something that normally no one would ever hear about, which is just a trivial faulted line. And then he says, quote, what do you want me to say? It's not good, end quote. But back to the erratic swings in the load I mentioned above. Data centers can't be allowed to expose the grid to this behavior, which means that every single one of them needs some UPS, uninterruptible power supply, technology with a sort of AC-DC-AC bridge, where the GPUs are decoupled from the grid and interfaced through this sort of setup where you have some sort of combination of batteries and supercapacitors connected to the DC part. This kind of approach is still in its infancy, in a way, and in principle it works because basically the batteries plus supercaps act as a sort of bank that swings the power back and forth to smooth out the load, such that the load seen by the grid is stable. Again, in principle, this works, but the problem is that this is an extremely complex, delicate, and expensive equipment that requires a ton of very careful engineering and control tuning that very few people understand how to do, and it also means that each one of these facilities needs to be paired with a shit ton of batteries, both in the UPSs themselves, but then also externally with dedicated additional battery storage facilities that can store power and shift it around to maximize the uptime and bridge the gaps between bigger and longer duration load swings. Almost done. And that's really the issue here. Capacity in terms of just numbers of gigawatt value is one thing, but the reality is that in order to actually connect these systems to either the grid or just an adjacent on-site generation plant or both, the amount of tech, resources, and advanced engineering involved is just absolutely insane. And my impression right now is that the market isn't really pricing that reality in because it's too esoteric, obscure, and technically advanced to be in the public consciousness. People just see big data center and think big power, which is true, but it's so much more than just that. Realistically, the engineering and infrastructure required to meet the kinds of projections of data center growth we are seeing, I just don't see it happening. It's insane and it's borderline delusional. On top of that as well, what we're seeing in my industry is these tech developers just crashing into the field like a wrecking ball. It's all a race. Everything is about speed, speed, speed. We're not really taking the time and doing the due diligence to really iron these problems out. It's all about get online first, figure out the issues later, which is fine if you're a tech startup. That's an absolutely toxic mindset to take into real engineering as opposed to tech bullshit. The grid is very fragile, is a very fragile and tricky thing, and the consequences here are extreme and impact so many people, really everyone. Anyway, I have much more to say about this topic as it's quickly coming to dominate my professional life, but this email is pretty long, even for a prolific reader such as yourself. True, I am. So I'm going to give you maybe some interesting technical background. Blah, blah. Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Okay, he wasn't like a retard who's like, well, it's GG. Like, they're going to try and do this and it's fucked. He actually explained everything, explained why. W emailer.
Wow. Destiny, you don't have to believe me, but I'm an electrical engineer with data center operations experience. Almost every data center has a giant UPS and genset installed. The idea that you would just let your data center ungracefully crash the second the power goes out is asinine. I don't know what you think you're responding to, but that's literally what the guy in the email was talking about, but good response. Okay.
Remember to hit that like and subscribe, and don't forget the notification bell so that my videos show up right in your feed.